It might be well to know of an announcement that was made earlier in the week. President Ford challenged Carter to debate. Carter has accepted. We don't know yet what the number of debates will, whether it'll be just an exhibition or two, or whether it will carry on over a period of time. The suggestion was then made that why couldn't we, who are a part of the family here, transmit some questions that we thought should be debated. And Carol Hinderly promised to send it to Congressman Quia, who was a good friend of President Ford, and he pointed out that Carter's sister was here at Holden at one time, and he thought that through her they could get it into the hands of Governor Carter. Using Jim Burtness's phrase, we ought to establish a few parameters in order to see to that whatever discussion or whatever questions are proposed might actually be recorded. I asked Marlene, Carol's secretary, if she would make herself responsible to see to it that the questions that are proposed are recorded on paper, but it would appear that any questions that might come may pop as a good idea, but may not be stated in the best way. Therefore, it seems to me that we ought to have an editing committee or an editing purpose or person. I don't see Jan Larson here this evening, but I'm sure that if she were willing, or if she is willing to do it, knowing that she's a teacher of English and also an editor for the Christian Century, I think she would be a first-class person to do the editing for us. Do you support that proposal?
So moved.
All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Well, she, of course, can say no yet, but at least we'll say she was unanimously requested to do this task for us. I think you might enjoy a little bit of humor that's in the Christian Science Monitor for last Monday. Here is a cartoon, and above it says, Speech, Therapy, and Debating School. There's a lady teacher and a male teacher. There are two studios. On one side, Carter is occupying one studio with a mic there. On the other side, Ford is occupying a studio with a mic there. The man who is a teacher, he's got a briefcase of tape recordings. Richard Burton, Gomer Pyle, Harry Truman. The lady has a tape recorder or record of William Jennings Bryan, who was the golden mouth man from La Platte, Nebraska, was that it? And the lady says, or he says, no, she says to the man, "You've got Ford trying to cultivate a southern accent? Heavens, I've got Carter trying to get rid of his." But alongside this cartoon, they have an editorial that I think is worth reading that can provide background for our thinking tonight. The Ford-Carter Debates. If Gerald Ford were leading rather than trailing Jimmy Carter in the polls, he probably would not have agreed to debate his Democratic opponent. Clearly, he views the proposed nationally televised debates as an opportunity to regain lost ground. How much further, after all, could he fall behind? On the other hand, he might well narrow the gap. The decision, in any case, is a welcome one. A face-to-face confrontation of the two presidential contenders will be a genuine public service, especially in a campaign which already has focused too much on the generalities rather than the specifics of vital issues. The debates will stir public interest at a time when participation in the political process is discouragingly low. And of course, they will test the ideas, judgment, and performance of the candidates. On the latter score, it is the conventional view to regard President Ford as something of a verbal stumbler, or at least as an uninspired speaker. But as his acceptance speech at the nominating convention in Kansas City demonstrated, with a little effort, he is able to assert himself vigorously and quite effectively. If the debates are to serve their highest purpose, however, and that is to inform and enlighten the American public, it is important that they have the proper format. This means the candidates should be able to respond to each other as much as possible so that controversial points are not left dangling unanswered. The League of Women Voters, which is offering to sponsor the debates, suggests the candidates answer questions from print and broadcast journalists. Mr. Carter also says it would be best if newsmen posed the questions. There is merit to this approach. If left strictly to themselves, the candidates might tend to avoid the most sensitive issues. But it is also true that in their eagerness to be heard, newsmen rarely follow up on each other's questions. In the historic debates between John Kennedy and Richard Nixon in 1960, it often happened that one contender flatly contradicted the other on some point, and the panel of questioners, instead of demanding a reply, hurried on to another topic. Therefore, we would suggest the League of Women Voters work out a format that would encourage follow-through without filibuster. Whether the debates of 1976 could take on more the character of the lengthy Lincoln-Douglas encounters, which comprised an opening statement, a reply, and a final rebuttal, is problematic in this day of electronic journalism. But some provision ought to be made for the candidate to ask each other questions and react to each other's points. In other words, for genuine debate and not anticipated replies to anticipated questions. One dimension of the debate will naturally be the personality of the candidates, how they handle themselves, the tone they strike, the character they convey. These will be significant elements in the final judgment of voters. But this can also be an opportunity for a much-needed analysis of two decidedly different approaches to government. Mr. Carter, for instance, wants to reorganize and streamline the government, at the same time providing a higher level of public services. Mr. Ford believes government is too big. He would return more powers and funds to the states. Mr. Carter would use the levers of government to create more jobs. Mr. Ford prefers tax incentives for the private sector to stimulate employment. On these and other issues, the American people have listened to a great deal of rhetoric in the past months, but little effort has been made to explain the economics of such complex issues. The upcoming debates could help clarify the fundamentals in a way that would enable each American to vote with a greater understanding of the choices at hand. Ought we to perhaps suggest that we would like to see debates start not later than the middle of September and that they be weekly affairs? Would there be any objection to making some such proposal? I see some affirmative nods of the head.
Well, that sounds good from our point of view, but I think we have to remember we have an incumbent president that also has a job to do, and to be constantly preparing for a weekly debate. Anybody's been in forensics knows that it's a bit of a job.
I grant that, but we must also remember that these men have more experts at hand than what we had when we debated that can really deal with a thing, and the president or the governor need not more than scan it to see whether or not it represents them. It seems to me that if Lincoln and Douglas could in their day indulge in something like that, that it's possible, and one or two debates is only going to be an exhibition. But, and of course they don't have to listen to anything we say, it would only be a suggestion. Well, if you think it unwise to make some such suggestion, then we ought not to do so.
I think the Vice President is going to make some debate too, or what?
If what?
The Vice President candidate?
Maybe so, but they'll probably be out on the trail speaking more directly to the public. I would guess not that they would participate in the debate, that it'll be the two principals, although we haven't heard much about their plans.
The one has challenged the other.
Right. And the public wouldn't like to have him, that is, have the president assign Dole to answer for him, or the reverse.
I would think 6 weeks was enough if you had six of them.
If six of them, we'd say just six.
They'd cut the whole campaign to 6 weeks.
Over here?
I feel, when I'm talking about some of the organization's problems, that neither candidate will be prepared or in position to do that soon. And probably the public would not become interested, the general public is not going to be interested until probably the 1st of October. And the timing is better because there's a lot of staff work they both have to do. There's a lot of organization of volunteers, and there is a money problem. As far as campaign funds are concerned. And I think 1st of October is early enough.
I would guess that on the TV, this may be a contribution by the TV systems in public interest.
Yes, but I'm thinking about they have other problems they have to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. And I just personally know that the staffs are not that well organized just now. Mm-hmm.
You have heard, yes?
Well, the cost got a meeting the first thing, and I thought, well, if you can do something like this, at least this can reach all the people, but much better than the going and campaigning and being exposed physically. Mm-hmm. It's a much better way of campaigning.
It'd be far better investment in terms of informing the public. Yeah. And educating. Well, ought we perhaps not to say anything other than perhaps something like this? We would hope that they would not limit themselves to one or two exhibitions in debate. Then it would indicate that we think that there ought to be as much as they can adjust to providing. Would that meet with your favor? Then it's left entirely to them, but we would like them to know that because they can both put on a good debate and seem to wrap the other one over the head in one or two exposures. But
well, that sounds kind of wishy-washy, though, if you just say it that way. I think you ought to give them a suggestion. I think your original thing a week, like for 4 to 6 weeks or something, is better to me. I mean, it should be. I think it's better specific than if you leave it that way.
Well, could we put it something like this? We would hope that they would not limit themselves to one or two exhibition debates, hopefully weekly, then whenever they start. Then they've gotten the feel of what our feeling is. It has to be left, of course, finally in there. All right, then we'll go on to...
Fred, one other thing. I was just wondering, should there also be some suggestion that rather than each debate being open to going anyplace, that they announce beforehand, for example, that the first debate will be on economics, the second debate on foreign policy, the third debate, so that they really have to stay with the subject and follow through.
That's an excellent.
If what?
I think that's an excellent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You heard the suggestion that they make known to the public what the area of discussion will be at the next debate. That was what.
But from the point of view that they stay with maybe one topic or the very most two, so that they have to deal with it in some depth. Because this is where the politicians have been getting away with murder.
Right, right.
On the surface.
All right, the suggestion is that they would, in each debate, limit themselves to one specific topic in order that it might be dealt with in depth. Is that generally acceptable? Yes.
Well, I think, yeah, it is, except that I would support the Christian Science Monitor's suggestion that there was some chance for follow-through, or whatever you want to call it, questioning, you know, further pursuing the question, and also having some at least one opportunity, at least like in one debate, where they did have a chance to directly ask each other questions.
Well, if you liked what was set forth here in this Christian Science Monitor editorial, we could actually say we respectfully call to your attention the editorial in the Christian Science Monitor for Monday, August 23rd, because this journal has a very high standing within the field of media and is thought of as a journal that tries to be objective in dealing with political affairs. Would that be something that you think would be following up behind Matheson's suggestion? All right, I don't see Marlene here, but she said she would see to it that somebody was taken. So I'm just assuming somebody is making records of these things. Oh, you've got the tape on it. All right, shall we now turn to the matter of issues or questions that you would like to see discussed or debated? I jotted down about 16 in a hurry here in case nobody else comes up with anything. Yes?
This goes back to our discussion Monday night. Would you support an independent group of reputable historians who would seek to explain how we became involved in Vietnam, not so that we might blame ourselves or others, but so that we might learn from our experiences in a healing manner? If so, would you make secret documents available to such a group?
Did you hear? You have it written out, so then make it available to Marlene. It may not have been picked up by the mic here. Do you feel that you would like to send a question of that kind along?
Yes.
I'm not particularly interested in it.
I think it has something to say about secrecy in government. I mean, everybody's against secrecy in government.
Could you tie it up with the whole question of pardon for the people connected with Vietnam? Then it would have,
I think maybe this could be worked on to tie it up into that, because I think it could be one of those questions where it would kind of measure the pulse of the attitude of the candidates towards secrecy in government, towards a number of things like that.
And Carter has already expressed himself the other day in Los Angeles in what was supposed to be a major policy address on the matter of pardon. Are you willing that be one if it's tied in with this whole question of pardon? Because that is driving at background many sensing what some of the background is, felt they couldn't conscientiously participate.
Yeah,
if we are concerned about secrecy in government, I would be interested in that as a subject. But I think to dredge out again the whole Vietnam issue might well, for many thousands of people in this country, cause further injury rather than healing. It is in its way experiencing some healing even now, has been, it seems to me. Secrecy as a subject, I would go for, personally.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else has their hand back?
Well, then you're getting at them. Many people be clouded and hearing a debate like this, they would be more emotionally influenced if they had lost a son in Vietnam, as opposed to the further issue of secrecy.
I'm getting at the whole Vietnam issue.
Mm-hmm.
There are other issues in the Vietnam matter apart from secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how you can get into that issue just talking about secrecy. I think that's impossible.
What's your response, Dave, to this suggestion?
Well, I think it's, as a Christian group, I think the idea of repentance, the idea of forgiveness and accountability and learning from what we do, I think that's important. And I think in our society, we always want to get on with things. And if we could phrase the question in a gentle way, so it's not a blaming way, but that it's really a learning experience, I think that has something to say about our Christian faith. I wouldn't want it to be something that condemns people. I'd appreciate any rewording that way. But it seems to me that there were so many dynamics that went in to Vietnam that many of us were wrapped up into. It seems to me important to learn from the mistakes. And I can't say how someone would be if I had lost a son in that. It would be a terrible pain. But I would hate to think that it was just all for nothing. I would hate to, maybe we can learn something. And that would be my reply, in the sense that we have always been this America number one. And it seems to me that what's important is to say, not that we made mistakes, but to learn from where we've been, to learn our history. Like I think, there's some very good sentences and expressions of this in the book Defining America, written by two Lutherans, Benning and Hefner. And I was very impressed by their analysis or their discussion of this very issue. So that's my concern.
We know this, that whatever we send along will, of course, be sifted, if they use it at all, by the two nominees. And by the way, I should have said perhaps at the outset, it would seem to me that it ought to be forwarded in a memorandum addressed to both of the nominees, so they need not feel they're getting some questions ready for Ford and others ready for Carter. So they come in. So that there's a feeling, or would be a feeling from on their part, that this is an effort to put the questions before them that we think ought to be discussed. Yes.
Well, I like Dave's proposal because it's specific again. I think if you just raise a general question of secrecy, that you'll get a bunch of debate, but you may still not know whether they would support something concrete like he had suggested. And that's why I like it. I like the idea of just historically having somebody go into that and at least having it brought out in an objective manner and see whether we can learn something from it.
I think maybe, since there'll be a lot of other questions coming that we'll want to discuss, that we shouldn't spend too much time on each. How many think we ought to forward the suggestion Dave has made with some editing? Will you indicate by a show of hands? How many no?
Well, depends on the editing. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Right.
My question is, would you want this debated on TV? Vietnamese, this is what we're posing, isn't it?
That's right.
They want this debated on TV, the Vietnamese question.
Well, the question, it carried. I could just look at those who voted against, and there were many more, 33 that voted for, and some of you didn't vote at all, and but there were not that many.
I think later we may find better questions, and if we do, I think, you know, then we may want to throw some out. I just like to throw that one out first, just to get the thing going.
Okay. All right.
You've been talking about logistics and sending a memorandum to the two candidates.
Yes.
Why not consider also sending a copy of that memorandum to the League of Women Voters, who may be supervising their debate?
Sure, good idea.
I think that'd be fine. Do you agree to that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But not to release it to the press.
No. The other thing is, a memorandum may actually evoke a direct reply from each of the candidates, you know, to the people who sent it, without it necessarily being topics that are discussed on the TV. And I think in that sense, I would still like his specific question. I think I'd be very interested. It may not be worthy of a
debate. Maybe we could send it in, and they'd send their replies to Holder. We could all leave self-defense on.
Right.
All right. What other suggested topic do you have? Yes.
I have one that it's an idea that I think probably needs rewording from everybody around here, but I'd like to have some question about if there are, say, a number of things that any citizen of the United States would have a right to expect in terms of livelihood, and if so, what they are and how they should be provided either by the government or privately. So it would include like welfare issues and negative income tax and that kind of thing.
That's a pretty big mouthful. I wonder whether there is right now, before a subcommittee of the House, a resolution that will first have to go before the whole Committee on Agriculture, and then it'll have to be concurred in by the Senate, whether or not that incorporates what you have in mind. Let me read not all the whereases, but there are four resolutions. The United States reaffirms the right of every person in this country and throughout the world to food and a nutritionally adequate diet. And second, the need to combat hunger shall be a fundamental point of reference in the formulation and implementation of United States policy in all areas which bear on hunger, including international trade, monetary arrangements, and foreign assistance. And third, in the United States, we should seek to improve food assistance programs for all those who are in need, to ensure that all eligible recipients have the opportunity to receive a nutritionally adequate diet, and to reduce unemployment and ensure a level of economic decency for everyone. And fourth, the United States should substantially increase its assistance for self-help development among the world's poorest people, especially in countries seriously affected by hunger and malnutrition, with particular emphasis on increasing food production and encouraging more equitable patterns of food distribution and economic growth. And such assistance, in order to be effective, should be coordinated with expanded efforts by international organizations, donor nations, and the recipient countries to provide a nutritionally adequate diet for all. One could just pose the question, do you support the resolutions that are before such and such a committee? I suspect this may get a chance to be approved in the House. That would cover a good deal of what you were concerned about.
I was thinking too of things like medical care. Like, nutrition is definitely a big part of it, but I think there are other extremely basic necessities.
That perhaps better be in a separate one.
Could be.
All right, would you think that it might be desirable to ask them if they would give their support to this?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, this is one, the second one that'll go in. Now, you raised the question of adequate medical help.
Payment, that's going to be rephrased.
Which one?
Adequate medical.
All right, will you phrase it for us?
Well, I think the issue right now is, you know, if we are going to go to a federally funded, federally controlled health care system, mm-hmm. or not. Ted Kennedy has one that he talks about a lot. Nobody, you know, understands it. And I think both of the candidates have to take a stand on that particular issue.
Even Monahan had one 4 years ago.
There are several that are, have been presented, and I think that they should make their views known on that particular issue.
Ought there not to be something also about the standards for adequate medical care?
That's too broad a question.
They all seem to dodge that.
Because you're talking about something that government cannot regulate. At least I don't think they can. That has to be an interprofessional type of regulation.
But there are lots of places where they don't even have doctors, and can there be any kind of help there?
Well, there are some states that are trying that. I think Oregon is one of them.
Does someone else want to try their hand at formulating this for debate? Yes.
I hadn't thought about formulating a specific question, but I think what I'd like to hear them say is what specific proposal would they like to give relative to medical care? Because I think politically, everybody's going to say that they're committed to some kind of a program. But I think, again, you have to sort of corner them as to what the specifics of their proposal would be.
It has to boil down to a debate issue.
Yeah, it really does, yeah. And I don't know if we as a group need to express specific concerns.
Here's a phraseology I found in an editorial that seemed to give some consideration to this. What would be minimum standards for a national health care program? Would that meet some support from you?
No.
Yes here, no over there.
Yes, I think that's an outstanding question. I think we really want to bring the questions
to them, and then,
and not for us to try to solve them tonight.
I guess I'd like to see tacked onto it, and how should the program be carried out? Because part of the debate about the various programs is whether they should go through already established private insurance companies or through federal ones. And so it's not just what would the minimum standard of care be, but how would you get there?
That's what where the debate would emerge, I would
right.
think, because I would guess that they would come at it from different angles, yes.
How funded and how regulated?
All right, if we could tack on how funded and how regulated. Yes?
There's already too much federal bureaucracy as it is. Is there any way we can formulate a question about what they intend to do with the mountains of red tape that business people and everybody, even the health profession, is inundated with?
Could we make that a separate issue, because that covers other areas too, where there's
a health area, because this is the area that seems to be everybody is looking at in order to save themselves some money, and in the long run it's going to cost us all money. Because we've got to create another federal bureaucracy on top of what they've already got. Look at the health care going to skyrocket.
They're both committed to try to cut it down.
I think they'd like a question like that.
I would guess that this whole question would come in during the debate if they're going to treat it anywhere as adequately.
Yes.
Maybe we'd go on then to some other area?
Part of that issue, could I tack onto it? And that would be a question involving establishing a program that promotes mental health, rather than the symptomological approach that is so often used, where we spend great deals of money on certain symptoms.
Would that come in under a national health program, or ought that to be stated separately?
Well, maybe if we said adequate physical and mental health in the very first part of the statement, what would constitute minimum standards for provision of adequate physical and mental health?
Would that...
Yeah, my concern maybe in attaching it is that we think essentially in terms of the medical model for a health insurance program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about another approach that would really find many other ways to promote mental health. An example, for instance, would be the Film Board of Canada, which seeks to promote healthy mental attitudes, healthy family life, through the development of a lot of very fine films. And provides a real resource to the schools and others in Canada. We don't have anything of that type in this country.
We'll have to decide here whether you think some of these are a little more peripheral, so it wouldn't get as much attention, because I don't think we can cover the waterfront. Tremendously important.
You would phrase that in such a way that it would not allow them to just kind of give a general answer, because I could just hear, oh yes, I'm for that, and I believe that we should really try to, I can almost give the answer to you.
Can we ask Dale to write that out, and it could be forwarded as part of the reaction, or as some reaction from here, and then it's in the hopper, and they will have to decide whether they want to pick that up or not. Would that be agreeable?
Okay.
All right.
Was the question of amnesty included in that first point or not? I'm not sure where that ended up.
I think Dave said that he would try to work that in, didn't you?
Well, I said it could be. I think if other questions come up, I think maybe we could have a few people editorially kind of try to streamline them. It may be that the amnesty one very quickly is going to be brought out in the open very quickly.
Do you want amnesty or pardon? I think Carter has a real point when he says there is something of an issue with amnesty, but with pardon, then you don't try to find fault or anything else, you just wipe the slate clean.
Dave?
Yes?
I have a question. I question whether Carter and Ford can debate the Vietnam issue on a fair plane, since for all these years Ford has been serving in public office on a national level, and Carter has never served on a national level. Therefore, because he can always say, I did not have a part in any part of this, therefore, I could do it better.
Yeah, I see your point. I think that's true. But at the same time, Ford is going to be arguing, well, I've got all this experience, I'm running on my record and so forth. So I agree with you that in a sense that may be unfair that way, but by the other side, the incumbent has other advantages. So I think overall, I don't think it is unfair.
I don't think that we could give too much attention to that, because that would be the equivalent of begging the question. And let's rather get on to other, and they will have to determine the last analysis whether they want a debate or not. But we're transmitting what the feeling of the group here is.
I appreciate
yours that. Is methodological, as it were.
Well, no, I think we're concentrating a lot on what has been. And I would be more interested in, them taking a more level plane and what they project they're going to do.
All right, let's get on with some of those things that, yes, over here.
In that connection, I'd like to suggest some question related to their position on selling strategic arms to other countries. To whom? What's the criteria? What's the limit? Etc., etc. I don't have it formulated, but I'd like to know their personal position on that.
I have a question.
Yes, but first of all, this question about the wholesale sale of arms to the Mideast and to many trouble spots. This is really a question that they ought to face, should they not? And again, we can leave the phraseology of that until later. Are you agreed that that ought to go into the hopper?
Yes.
Okay, then back there and then over here.
I have a question on nuclear power. I'd like to know what their stand is as to the safety of existing nuclear power plants, what they feel as far as putting more nuclear power plants in, and if anyone else has any other ideas.
How nuclear power fits into their plan for meeting energy needs.
And would they develop other forms?
All right, could we just in a general way have what place does peaceful use of atomic energy play in their program for the supply of the shortfall in energy? Okay, back here.
I have a question.
the lady first, she had her hand up first and then.
I have a question that's kind of just a defense thing. Both Bread for the World and the UN Habitat Forum unanimously have suggested that if we cut down, if all countries cut down on defense by 5%, it gives us money to start feeding the world. And I would be interested in knowing where these candidates come in, if they're going to take that recommendation seriously.
Did you hear the suggestion? You quoted the UN has...
The UN Habitat Forum suggested it unanimously to the UN, and it was received. And Bread for the World has stated that if countries unanimously agree to cut down defense by 5%, which is a very small percentage, that it would make money available to feed the world.
Bread for the World now is suggesting 1% of the GNP. Gross national product.
But I would be interested in whether these candidates are going to take that seriously and if they intend to act on that.
Would you like that to be included?
Yes.
All right. And I think the UN right now is at the point of 0.7% but that of the GNP. But if it were, that would be a huge amount.
Forward in terms of however small decreasing defense budget.
Yes.
I'd like to introduce something that is not easily quantified, not easily categorized. That is related to what these individuals think about the dignity of man, the dignity of the American individual as an individual. And I bring that up in the context of where we seem to be moving in relation to guaranteed income, in relation to Medicaid, food stamps, welfare, and everything that is pushing us in the direction of total government maintenance, and worse than that, total government maintenance at the federal level. I think there's a great danger that nobody is speaking to.
Are you saying that guaranteed income would be for or against?
No, I'm not saying for or against any of these things, but I'm saying that either these things in composite have a deteriorating effect on the total dignity of the American citizen. And we've seen that deteriorating effect throughout the years, and sometimes generation after generation. I'm very well acquainted with it because I'm involved, heavily involved in social program at the state level. And I think that I think I'd like to see a great deal more said about what the federal programs as well as state programs, what effect those are having on the dignity of the individual, and where it's going to lead us.
This is a difficult question. We know that if people are constantly getting aid, that this is going to have a deleterious effect on their makeup and character.
Yeah, let's put it in just fairly basic terms. Just in the area of food stamps, a huge new program. And how many years ago has it been since nobody would really consider taking food stamps unless they're really down and out? The contrast that now, when the average college student has no qualms at all about accepting food stamps, because he's emancipated. I need this as part of my ongoing income. I'm entitled to it.
Whenever I face this problem, I like to go all the way back to the time when we lived in an agrarian form of society. Then every person who went hungry, it was because he wouldn't work, really, or till the soil. But we find ourselves in a situation now where we have, as it were, decided that I'll stay on the farm if you'll go in and make cars, or you'll go in and make shoes. There is an exchange of service, not each one deciding that by himself, but society has become reorganized under the industrial system. And as long ago as before a Kiwanis Club back in the mid-30s, during the Depression, I made the statement, and I still believe it, that when we have allowed that sort of thing to happen, then all of us together owe to each person who doesn't have a job the provision of opportunity to work. Not some of the other things, but we do. And I jotted down just very briefly, our industrial system has failed in the provision of jobs for the unemployed. Whether it's a depression or a recession, every now and then it goes zigzag up and down, and there are always some people who would like to work who don't have a chance to work. What do you intend to do to restore hope to the youth who are without work? I remember the Chinese girl the other evening, she left yesterday, and she said, "We don't have hope." And from some other things she said, she had tried awfully hard to get work. Now, are we going to reorganize hours so people work shorter? It seems to me a lot of creative work and thinking has to go into this area. It's a tremendously complex thing. Whether it's going to be solved as we're doing it now or what, nobody knows. Yes.
I really would like to hear the candidates speak to this. I don't expect them to have answers.
You mean to the question of integrity of, or respect for
the dignity of the individual?
Could we try and get a question that would try not to bias it either way, so that, you know, they can come at it, but yet try to force them to state clearly, you know, on some issues, so that they don't just go ahead and say, "Yes, I believe in human dignity," and, you know, they can give you the canned speech very easily. Could you maybe think about a question like that and then maybe come back and they'll jot it down?
Do our present methods of dealing with human need deprive people of their dignity?
Yes.
Would that be the way you would, something like?
I'd like to speak to the opposite side of that, Dr.
Okay.
Because I think that the one question I came with is that I think we have really made it tough for a fellow with a new idea, a new invention, a new way of doing things to get started and to maintain it and to keep it going. But our tax structure is opposed to them. The fact that we hand out money to people who won't do anything, so why should you work for something when you're getting it for nothing? All that side of the picture that for me is a very keen thing. Like Dr. Greenfield had a beautiful hospital, $14 for a private room, never had a hospital cause disease. All the state did was make trouble. Finally, Disparity just closed it down. And immediately offered him five jobs at five different state hospitals. He headed the biggest one, chief of staff at Anoka. But he couldn't run his own. I mean, this is just one area that over and over again, not just in privately owned hospitals, or privately owned almost anything. If jobs are going to be caused, somebody has to have an idea so that there's a new plant going and new job opportunities given. And you can't just make jobs for them. You know, like the WPA was, and that was a very morale-fatiguing thing when the job wasn't very real. When it was real, it was another thing.
Before we take your reaction, Carol, do you want this question of human dignity that was stated?
My relationship between the two.
If what?
I don't see those two necessarily in opposition. I hear
no, they're related, I think.
Okay, do you want to formulate the way in which it should be put, Carol?
Well, I don't know how you can do it, but just so that the government doesn't take over what we ought to be able to do for ourselves. This is what irks me. How you want to do it?
All right, we have got, the tape is picked up, I take it.
By the same token, I would like to get it so that we're not just producing a lot of junk to make jobs. You know, and we like, I hear the B-1 bomber being sold because it'll produce jobs. Well, maybe we need a B-1 bomber, maybe we don't, but we certainly don't need it to produce jobs. There's a lot of other things that we can do.
There have to be substitutes for that, though. There has to be substitutes.
And we have
a situation now where we're destroying lives right here. because they don't have jobs, because they cannot produce anything. And they, you know, people that can't produce and would like to produce are being destroyed. You know, not by bombers, but by this insidious thing
called
help, you know.
But it's a very complex thing if we can work out the question, because as new technology comes in, you put people out of work, there's a tendency to just say, well, let's produce more to keep them busy, and then we deplete our resources.
May I ask whether Marlene is here now? Or whether someone she assigned.
Yeah, we're getting down.
You're getting down. Okay, fine.
Tape is going.
I want to be sure that those who are far away from the mic.
All the questions are coming on tape. I've been sitting with the tape.
Okay, fine. Well, then we've got both of you men. Yes.
I think this is relevant to what Dave is saying. If that's the reason why, if you haven't solved that problem, I thought I would bring this question. I think. Part of what's being said, and it's not all what this gentleman was saying or implying back here, because I do think some of this was an implication, but I think one of a debatable question, and one which is really has been sidestepped for years and years, is whether a president feels that there should be a national manpower policy, which would take into consideration, I mean, which would really take into consideration the whole, so that there would be a policy if defense industries were phased out, so that there would be a peace conversion policy, so that there would be a policy if certain areas of the country were suddenly depressed and left without, what are we asking the government, in other words, to have an overall national manpower policy, just as this other right to food question is really asking them if they'll have a national food policy.
An environmentalist group up here in Idaho has just now won a victory that they've got to cease cutting selectively in a national forest, and it'll wipe out the sawmill in that town, and something like 3,000 people will lose their job.
And no one is addressing that.
Yes, that's overall.
That's the issue I'd like to hear discussed.
If what?
That's the issue I think has to be discussed. Land use for a new factory, you can't get it. Water power for right here, and we wouldn't need 30,000 gallons of oil, and so far we've been turned down on any suggestion of water power. You know, these are what are in the picture.
Along with this policy on manpower, or use of manpower, or human power, also use of land and water power resources. Ruth?
I think we need a long-term energy and transportation policy also. Long-term energy policy. When the foreseeable sources of energy are going out and there really aren't any plans
In connection with that, could we remind them that we don't appear to have made much progress since the OPEC rise of oil prices? We suddenly had a spurt when we concentrated on, but we don't hear too much of it since.
How many million people are employed that are dependent on the car would be interesting. Where are we thinking that they can be reemployed in case cars no longer are a viable part of our transportation?
One out of five.
One out of five in our economy.
That's what they say. I phrased the question, just going back to here, to see if it sounds this way. How can we as a society provide dignified human employment without wasteful use of resources and without concentration of power in public or private hands? I think we're talking about concentration of power, be it government, be it big business, or both together, which is usually the case. Is that what we're asking?
The first part of that sounded pretty good.
Read it again.
How can we as a society provide dignified human employment without wasteful use of resources and without concentration of power in public or private hands?
We'll pass that on, shall we? something will go in the hopper. Any other areas? We haven't touched anything on foreign relations yet, yes?
The question of nuclear disarmament, I think, is one which I would like to see the super debate. I don't recall it being raised earlier tonight.
It was with regard to peaceful use of nuclear disarmament, or nuclear, or you mean...
I think there are two separate issues. The question of nuclear energy, I think it's tied with the whole question of energy and resources. And I think it's simply a part of that.
Well, that becomes...
Disarmament is a separate item, a separate issue. And I'd like to simply forward that.
All right. That's a huge thing, because there are so many nations involved, but it's got to get consideration. Any others?
I don't know whether you want to get this issue in or not, and I don't know how I'm going to phrase it, but it has a little bit to do with their religion. Both of these people claim that they are very devout religious people and very devout born-again Christians. And I have two points I'd like to raise. First, are they willing to do anything to allow some of the communist countries to allow once more American missionaries to penetrate their borders? Two, are they concerned at all about the Christians, some of the Christians that have been persecuted in Iron Curtain countries? These two points have rarely been debated by anyone.
Well, I'm afraid that you would get into a shouting match on this, because they can turn right around, and that is another side.
I thought I'd bring it up.
Fine. We've heard it, but I don't think we can put that in the hopper. Over here.
Well, I was interested in hearing what their feeling would be on closing in the tax loopholes that big business and money people have.
Well, Regan said, why concentrate on making the rich poor? That was his response. But it's not Regan that's going to be debating. Would you like to have this in a review of the tax structure, so that those who have... who have loopholes by which they maintain their wealth are not excused? Yes?
I think we could be a little more general on that, because all of us here have tax loopholes too, and they could very well close ours as well. Why not?
They're talking now about that all those having more than $20,000 of income a year, they should be scrutinized, their whole situation should be scrutinized carefully.
Well, you could ask a general question. Do you favor tax reform? And if so, how?
Yeah,
and you'd be bound to get an answer.
That probably puts it so that it becomes a debatable issue. Any others back there who haven't? Yes?
Government and so forth. I think my concern is our Bill of Rights, what has happened to that. And maybe we could ask them how they feel Senate Bill 1 affects our rights and how it affects the Bill of Rights.
How the Senate what?
Senate Bill 1.
Will you explain it briefly for those of us who may not have read it?
I have not read it for a while. And so I have forgotten, I think I've tried to forget the details. It has a great deal to do with the government's right to exercise its power without due process of law. Supposedly it meant to correct some of the abuses of the No-Knock Bill and some of the crime legislation that was passed in the Nixon administration. And actually, rather than correcting...
Do you all hear?
No.
I guess you'll have to raise your voice a little more.
As a result, this bill is supposedly going to heighten some of the
the excesses that we're done during the Bush administration, and still, okay, well, let's try again.
Congress is working on this through committees, and I wonder whether we hadn't better leave that.
It's through committees, and from what I've read of the bill and heard people say about it, it's a bill that needs to be scrapped completely because it cannot be amended, reformed, or it's an impossible bill. I'd like to know how they feel about this because Flynn supported it.
I don't think we can give them anything unless we ourselves know it well enough so we are convinced that, and you seem to be a bit hazy in your own memory of it. And while this whole area is important, we'd have to, I think, have a little bit more of concrete material before.
My suggestion on this, because it's so complicated, the language in this particular bill, that a group like the Legal Women Voters, before the debate begins, explain all the technicalities of it to the public.
I would guess that this would be something they would turn aside from for a public debate. Now, what does the group think?
This bill is dealing with the reform and the general reform in the criminal code.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This bill, I've seen a copy of it. And, okay, I had an experience in Washington last fall. I was a page in the Senate, and it was kind of a joke because this bill was about 500 pages thick. Nobody even knows what it's about, even like, you know, the people around the hill. It's just kind of a big, you know, won't give me, you know, a copy of S1, and they ask, you know, if 10 copies you can hardly carry. And it's been on the docket now for quite some time, and it's, you know, up close and to the top, and there doesn't seem to have, you know, been much action taken outside of committee, you know, as far as I know.
There are actually good causes to come before them, but because of the unwieldy, whoever is proposing it and supporting it has to get it where it's manageable.
Maybe to make it debatable, we could say something like, what is your position on reform of the criminal code in general and specifically with respect to S1, so that it wouldn't be just, are you for or against this bill, but the broader issue.
Now, the handgun control, that's been before us, but the Rifle Association always knocks that down. Would be a good thing for them to express themselves publicly.